Security Serengeti. We're your hosts, David Schwindiger and Matthew Kaner. Stop what you're doing, subscribe to our podcast, leave us a lovely five-star review, and follow us at SerengetiSec on Twitter.
We're here to talk about some cybersecurity and technology news headlines and hopefully provide some insight, analysis, and practical application that you can take into the office to help protect your organization.
Views and opinions expressed in this podcast are ours and ours alone and do not reflect the views or opinions of our employers.
You know, my picus was blue once and no one wrote a report about it.
Your what was?
My ficus. My ficus. My ficus was blue.
Woo. Thought we were going to have to age restrict this podcast. All right. So today we are talking about the ficus blue report. I actually spoke with the ficus folks at Black Hat and they confirmed that it is pronounced ficus, which makes me so sad.
I'm still going to come out pronounce it ficus though. It's forevermore ficus.
So David did most of the work on this one and did all of the documentation, but I am stealing all of the credit here.
As you should.
As usual.
It's more like stealing the blame, really.
So this is the Blue Report. This is the second year of the Blue Report by ficus, where they look at the attack simulations from their security validation platform, which is killing me because we were breach and attack simulation, then we were continuous security validation, and now we are security validation platform. They use this to assess the real-world performance of security products over 136 million different simulations. This includes their results from the attack path validation and the detection rule validation products. So detection rule validation is actually something that I got to talk with them at Black Hat about because I specifically asked them, you'll recall, David, when we talked about breach and attack simulation before, we've talked about how do you connect this with your rules. I asked them if they worked with CardinalOps for example, to match their validations with the content rules being provided by CardinalOps. And they were like, oh, we actually provide detection rules ourselves. So apparently they're getting into the content development as well, and they test their own rules. Frankly, I think is kind of a conflict of interest there. I don't know that I would want to have the same vendor provide my content as tested my content.
Yeah, there's a conflict of interest there. And I guess it really depends on how they're doing the actual confirmation. Yeah. You know, if you could peek behind the curtain to see how they're doing the validation, it might be perfectly valid validation versus something that could be, you know, fudged depending on the outcome.
Testing or studying to the test or teaching to the test.
Right. Yeah. It's like the heck was it? I think it was a Microsoft problem where Microsoft had a bug and someone had submitted the bug to Microsoft, said, hey, this is a problem you need to fix. And here's my exploit code that demonstrates how you can exploit this bug. And Microsoft, rather than fixing the bug, simply defended against the exploit. And he's like, oh, what if you change this, then the exploit still works because you didn't fix the problem. All you do is prevent my exploit from working.
Yeah, that's about right. So we talked about the Blue Report in episode 137, which wasn't too long ago, but the problem there was we talked about it about 8 months after it was released. This time we're getting to it only a month and a half after it was released. And we previously talked about the ficus Red Report, so last year.
Yeah, which is an awesome report. I mean, even now, I think that report would still be valid to go back and read.
So there actually is a ficus Red Report 2024. I don't know how I missed this. I'm going to have to download and see if there's any difference in this one from last year's.
Hey, we got a subject for our next podcast.
We're just going to turn this into the podcast.
We could turn it into the reports podcast, where all we do is read, you know, or summarize reports for people.
I could actually see some value in that, because some of these reports are trash. And having somebody, like, explicitly come out and be like, this report sucks, don't waste your time with it.
Summarize it, but will it tell you it sucks? We could do that.
Eventually. Then we'll just be replaced by AI. I wonder, you know what? We have 147 episodes. I wonder if we're at the point where you could train us with AI, train an AI on us and just let it go.
Well, you could train it. You could easily train it on our voices, but could you train it on our sarcasm and wit? I don't know.
Rapier wit. Turns out it's more like a cardboard sword wit. All right. You had a comment on the report organization.
Oh, right. So the way the report's organized is right up front. They have two sections, which is key findings and key recommendations. And you within seven pages are those two parts. So you don't have to read the full 38 pages of the report, I think, in order to really pull out some useful information from it. You can go into the report to get the details or whatever, but if you don't have time for that, the first seven pages will give you what you need from to fully understand the way the report, the findings for the report and what you should do about them.
It's always nice. All right. We are going to work our way through this son of a gun and talk about the methodology first, and then we're going to go through some of their individual points and then finish up with the recommendations at the end. So methodology, there's a methodology here. They have a couple definitions here. Prevention, effectiveness. And they have the most redundant definitions here. 80% means that 80 out of 100 simulated attacks were prevented. The higher the number, the better. That's amazing.
More like the definition of percentage.
Yeah. Yeah, it's ridiculous. And then they also looked at detection effectiveness, although this one looked at both whether the attacks were logged and whether the attacks generated alerts. The generated alerts thing, well, we'll talk about it a little bit later when we talk about the alert score, but that one bugs me. So they ranked the scores on 0 to 100%, which makes sense. They called inadequate 0 to 19%, basic 20 to 39%, moderate 40 to 69%, all the way up to optimized through managed and optimized, which is 90 to 100%. These seem very arbitrary. I mean, it looks like they just picked out quintiles. And I don't know that 40 to 69% actually represents a moderate level of alerting or logging.
Well, I think they, and what they're trying to do here, I think, is develop some categorization for something no one's really categorized before. Because I was thinking that when I was reading through this, it would be nice if they were able to sync this up with CMMI or something as far as maturity model.
I mean, they're using maturity model terms for sure.
Right. But it's not tied to something else that's more robust definition of maturity. So I don't know. I think it's a start anyway.
I do too, but I would like to see, because zero to 19% inadequate. Yes, absolutely. But is optimized 90 to 100%? We talked about this a little bit before. Do we need to detect 100% of things? This is kind of like, I know that there's been some talk in some of the capability maturity models where you don't actually want to go all the way up to the top because going to the top makes it too rigid. I don't remember if you have seen this, but when they're talking about like SOC procedures, like you don't want to go all the way to a 5 for SOC procedures where everything is very rigid and hidebound and inflexible.
Well, I mean, I think the issue here is that they're trying to say that if, you know, you hit these percentages, then this means that you're doing this, this, and this. When I think really the problem is that if you're hitting these percentages, it's assumed that this, this, and this, right? It's not a definitive indicator of that. So like if you go into the report, the description they have for optimizes, organizations with optimized security controls continuously monitor, refine, update them to keep up with the evolving threat landscape. And
that's not related to a percentage.
And maintain their edge in exposure management. But if you go through the report, there are organizations that are really close to that, like 85, 86, right? That are very close to being optimized. And yet their other scores are much lower than that in a different category. Which seems, because I would have liked to think anyway, in that your scores would go up almost in a uniform fashion where, you know, your detection and your prevention scores would be very similar because your organizational processes that got you those scores are very similar. Whereas this seems to be like all over the place. So I think what they're trying to do is say, if you have these scores, that means you're doing this, when it's not exactly a correct measurement. It's not exactly arbitrary, but it's not a definitive rating about how well you're doing something if you get that score. It's almost coincidental.
Yep, I agree. And this is actually, there's some people have started talking about capability maturity models for detection, and maybe that's a discussion for a different day. So let's not get hung up right here on this, because otherwise we're never going to get through this. So,
which everybody's dying to do.
I know, right? Let's really dive into the depths of this. So overall prevention and detection effectiveness performance, they measured on log score, alert score, prevention score. So we're going to talk about those here. The log score increased from 37% to 40%. Now you will remember that this is using their tool. So the sample here is companies that are using their tool. So I think that it makes sense for the log score to increase almost 50%. because they are ostensibly, they have purchased this Picus tool to help improve their security posture.
In theory.
In theory. And this is moving the organizations from basic into quote unquote moderate.
Well, there's, you know, in these organizations, when they cross those thresholds, they throw a party. Like, oh, we moved into the moderate zone. So,
yeah. What I would love to see here, because they talk later about attack paths. What I would love to see here is super targeted recommendations about, like, sure, you know, you're only logging 40%, but, you know, if you log these three new sources or these three new event types, you would cover some X percentage of our tests that are, you know, right in the middle of the attack path. Like, an attacker has to go through these accounts or these domain controllers to get to your crown jewels, quote unquote.
Yeah, I guess reports have those. And which would be outstanding.
It's possible they offer this. Maybe they just don't talk about it in this report. The alert score fell.
For sure.
Yeah. The alert score fell from 12% from 16%, which is really weird to me, although I can think of a couple scenarios when this happens. The most obvious scenario is that alerting has gotten worse, which is kind of implied by this, but that doesn't seem, people's detection logic doesn't just get worse. And again, they ostensibly bought this tool so they can improve their scores. I think what's more likely is Picus has either expanded their testing. For example, maybe they doubled the number of tests they have and the detection controls only detected a little more. Example, they had 50 tests last year, and if you detect 8, that's 16%. This year, there's 100 tests and you detected 12. So numerically, you detected more than you did last year, but because there are more tests, your percentage goes down.
Yeah, I think that's probably exactly what happened.
That makes the most sense to me, because the other thing I thought of was maybe Picus reworked their tests to be more devious and undetectable, which there might have been some of that too. Maybe some of their tests were really obvious.
No, but I mean, what that also shows, though, is that the number of alerts they're creating is still either stagnating or, well, it's got to be stagnating, right? It's not going to fall back unless people are disabling a bunch of alerts.
Yeah.
Which is possible. But it's an evidence of stagnation. So there, every year or every day, you're getting more and more different types of attacks and different kinds of attacks. And the volume of attacks is increasing. But if you never create more alerts to detect new attacks, you're not going anywhere. You are getting worse.
Yeah. And I wish that they had made that explicit, because otherwise this almost just looks like people's alerting just got worse without that context.
Instead of just lazy.
Instead of just lazy. Yeah. So this means, though, 12% means that less than 1 in 8 attacks trigger an alert. I assume by alert they mean in the SEM, because later they talk about a much higher percentage of things are prevented. So, all right. So, because otherwise that would make no sense. But this goes back to this percentage thing again. It makes sense not to alert every time something is blocked. Like if your organization had 100% blocked, 100% logged, and 100% alerted, you'd be like target back when they got breached, because they were ignoring alerts because there were so many alerts.
Well, the thing is, if you're blocking and that is a prevention, that should really, you shouldn't be, in my opinion, most of the time, you should not generate an alert based on that, because there's no action for you to do. The action's been done, right? So if you've got, 100% stuff being blocked or prevented, then your alerts should be zero.
And I think we talked about this before too, in the last meeting. Now that we're talking about it, I'm having deja vu. Like, I wonder if those numbers should add up to 100%, like prevented and blocked should add up to 100%, or prevented and alerted, sorry.
I would say in theory, right.
Yeah.
So I think what your prevention and ideally, your prevention and alerting should be 100%, but absolutely your prevention and detection should be 100%. So anything that's not prevented is at least detected, so that you can go back and find it in the logs if you need to, even if you haven't generated an alert on it. Ideally, you would have an alert on all those, though.
Yeah. I do think, though, that there are some times you want to detect block things. I agree that most of the time you don't. Like if it's a scan activity from the external, you don't want to detect that. That's boring. Mm-hmm. There's no action. But if you've got like command and control detections coming from an internal host, right, you do probably want to detect on that, even if it's blocked. So you just have to be selective.
Well, I would say in that scenario, there's two things that are happening there. You've got the prevention of the devious activity, but you have the detection of the fact that something went wrong and it got there in the first place.
Yeah.
Yep. So I'd almost call those two different actions or two different activities. which of course are not going to show up that way in the sim or whatever. Those are going to show up as one, but I would say there are two sides of one coin there.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone seems to be in the middle on logging. You know, if you look at the raw numbers, you got 57% on logging and your alerting's at the bottom. So I'm inclined to say that it would actually be better if those numbers were flipped, where your alerting was at 57% and your detection was at, you know, 12% or whatever. Because at least that, because the way I'm looking at it is that if you've got 57% alerting, then you may have fewer alerts, but at least all of them are detecting something, or most of them are detecting something. Whereas when you've got a high number of detections and no number of alerts, you're logging a whole bunch of stuff, but you're not alerting on it. It's like a whole bunch of stuff is being wasted. So it almost be an indicator that you're better with fewer alerts and then, or fewer alerts, but overall better quality alerts that would trigger more frequently or more accurately than the number of the detections. I'm not saying that's what you should shoot for. I'm just saying that if you were to look at the raw numbers and flip those, I would almost say that it would, looking at it in a raw aspect, that you would say that one organization that looked, you know, had the detection at 57, the alerting at 12, and an organization that had alerting at 57 and detection at 12, that, you know, the one with higher alerting would be probably better protected than the other, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I don't think that there's a direct relationship between them, because there are certain controls that are probably more important to have logging, where maybe let's say Active Directory. Where Active Directory, in this example, maybe their controls cover 10 log sources. So Active Directory represents 10% of the logs. If you have Active Directory in there, you got 10%. But 30% of their attacks involve Active Directory. So if you've got Active Directory logs in there, you can detect an alert on 30% of the attacks. Mm-hmm. Because so many attacks are like privilege escalation and lateral movement and stuff like that. So I don't know that we know that those can be directly related. Because my first thought of response when you were saying that was, well, you can't switch them. Because if you're monitoring your detection, your logging percentage is so low, then you can't alert on it. But then I realized that that's not necessarily true, because those aren't related.
Well, that's not quite what I was trying to say either. What I'm trying to say is that looking at it as a gross indicator of competency and protection level, you'd say that one that has the higher alert percentage and the lower detection versus flipping those, if you were just to compare those two side by side, which one would you think is better off from a protective standpoint than the other? It's just like a broad indicator of quality versus a definitive indicator of quality.
Yeah, I agree. This is a weird one. Some of these things are really interesting, but not very useful. Some of them are more than others. But they did have an interesting quote here. More logs do not necessarily equate to more visibility or better security outcomes, end quote.
Yeah, I think, and this is a holdover from the whole philosophy of log everything,
which I will admit I'm a huge proponent of, unfortunately. I get that it's not realistic, but I do wish that we could log everything.
Yeah, well, the thing is that you can log everything, but if you're not generating alerts from those same logs, then what's the point?
Yeah. Not wrong. I just want it all so that I know.
Yeah, you need to prioritize the logs and bring them in if you have use cases for those logs. Otherwise, what you've done is essentially pointless, right? You're logging all day, but you're not alerting on it. It's only really good for forensics at that point. So sure, once you eventually find out something bad has happened, you can go back and find it in the logs. But that's not great.
Yeah, and given that my history is in IR and digital forensics, it makes sense that I am all about having all of the logs. But it does allow us to say how busy we are. We can say we have onboarded X new log sources, and then leadership can go ask the threat detection engineering team, like, hey, what rules do you have in these sources yet? And they can go, we don't know. We didn't know they were onboarded. But stuff like this report, or stuff like this tool could be great for figuring out which logs to prioritize. It should be able to tell you, you know, X number of attacks, I use Windows logs, Windows OS logs. These need to come in first. So there's a lot less clarity. There's some things that we have a lot of clarity around. Like if you look online, there's tons of data around, there's a whole website built around Windows logs, Windows operating system logs. And I found a couple, because I went looking for this a couple years ago. I found a couple years ago where someone had built out a website that told you, like, these are the important logs to have for forensics. These are the important logs to alert on, et cetera, et cetera. I haven't seen that for like AWS and Azure logs, application logs. That stuff's just not there yet, or I can't find it. It's possible that it's there and I'm just haven't found it yet. So a tool like this showing you like what specifically these attacks and generating the logs of these attacks are super helpful to figure out what tools you need to, what logs you need to get into your SIEM and what alerts to build.
And is and that's in the report whenever there's a red indicator for an attack to say, hey, this is red because you don't have an EDR alert for this, or you're not logging this Windows event or something else. That's in the report for these?
It can be. I've only seen a detailed report from one of these products. And yeah, it would tell you like, we ran this report at this time. We ran it from this IP to this IP address. You should expect to see a log that looks something like this in there.
And that includes all your security controls then also. So we would expected to have seen a Windows event. We would have expected to see an EDR event. We would have expected to see a firewall event. All of those would be listed in there based on your control stack.
I don't know about that. It's probable that they don't include everything. They probably don't have a full awareness. The companies that make this probably can't give you, you know, every single tool.
Well, they don't need to, as long as they know what tools you have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if you've done all the integrations, then it's going to know that an EDR event was not triggered. You know, so it could say that there was no CrowdStrike event for this. So you should have a CrowdStrike event for this, because that would make you remediate. Because I would think that ideally, this would be tied into your ticket management system too, right? So you'd run the scan. It would say, okay, you failed this, this, and this, and it would kick off tickets to the appropriate group to create the content for those mistakes.
That does make a lot of sense. All right. Next section is real-world performance of cybersecurity products. They have a comparison here, and they mentioned that a number of security products have been tested against MITRE Ingenuity attack evaluations and have achieved 100% in prevention and detection coverages. But they said that they didn't actually find any tools that were able to successfully detect 100% or prevent 100% of attacks in the real world. They have us.
You know, what's...
Oh, sorry.
Well, I was just going to mention the scatter plot. Is that, you know, the scatter plot diagram that they have in here, it looks like a shotgun blast between 0 and 100. So it's not like, sure, they didn't hit 100, they were down at 90 or 95. They are all over the place as far as their failure rate.
That diagram is something. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. My assumption is that the x-axis is the product and the y-axis is 0 to 100.
Yeah.
But like they don't appear to, my wife actually, we were talking about this as we were walking, and my wife suggested that they were probably in alphabetical order, the products on the bottom, but then they just removed the bottom, and that explains why it's like 0, 100, or well, sorry, like 10, 90, 80, 70. Like they're not arranged in any discernible order. And if you assume that they're arranged in the same order, you know, the same one that is on the far left is the same one that is on the next one on the far left, then it makes even less sense. For example, about one third of the way through the graph under prevention, there is a cluster of three items that are near, one of them's near 100% and the others are like 90 and 85. But if you go directly below to the detection score, right in that level, it's all the dots are between 50 and 75%. So you're saying that there was a tool that prevented nearly 100% of your attacks, but only detected 60% of the attacks? That doesn't make any sense. Your detection score should always be higher than your prevention score. You can't prevent it if you can't detect it.
Well, unless it's what we were talking about before, where the prevention event's simply not logged.
Yeah, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills here. This makes no sense to me. But yeah.
Well, you are taking crazy pills, but I'm not sure that's how that's impacting this.
So, I mean, if you look at the detection score, it looks like the vast majority of them are between 0 and 25%. It looks like there's a huge like clustering there. And if you look at prevention, it looks like the main line is kind of clustered between 50 and 75. Mm-hmm. This whole thing makes so... Right. I would love to see the data underneath of this, because I think that their definition of detection is not the same as my definition of detection. That's the only way this makes sense.
You know, maybe we should go to their site and find the feedback and, you know, write a dissertation.
I would love to like have someone on and really like dive in. All right. Anyways, the only thing that these graphs illustrate is that these products are all over the map in terms of detection and prevention, which I guess is a good point, but it's hard to take action on it in a specific way.
Well, I mean, based on what we're seeing here, we also don't know what their output reports look like, so it's hard to say. But just based on the fact that the reporting differences between 23 and year 23 and 24 doesn't give me a lot of optimism for whether the output of these reports are really being actioned to any great degree.
Yeah, there's that. I would love to actually see an example report. I wonder if we can get one. Because I would love to know which of these tools scored in the like 10 to 25% for detection. This actually seems like this is valuable information in and of itself, the tool detection and prevention score. They wonder if they could start a sideline selling this data.
Well, I think that's something you and I talked about before, that these the thing about what we're looking at here is we would like to assume that the graphical output that we're looking at here, these scores and everything, are the result of conscious decisions by organizations about what they're going to detect and what they're going to alert on, when we're probably more closely looking at not the conscious decision of the organizations, but the conscious decisions of the product vendors for their default configuration settings.
Oh, no, I agree with that. That's the part that I'm saying is actually valuable to sell. Because like,
right,
if you're looking at trying to purchase a new EDR tool, I would want to know which one comes most secure out of the box. I think that would be interesting and worth spending money on.
Yep, I agree. You know, and the thing is that if they did this, if they did it correctly, you could sell it two different ways, right? You could sell it to people on, hey, the default out of the box for this EDR is better than the default out of the box for this EDR. And then they could also sell it back to those particular vendors saying, hey, you greatly increase your default configuration, you know, the protection of your customers by changing these default configuration settings.
Yeah, that would actually be really interesting if they found a specific company, for example, was using the same tool but had a much better rate. Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Well, I mean, the assumption there would be that that company has made those changes. So
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Well, that's how they find. They go talk to that company.
Yeah.
I was agreeing.
No, I was just thinking that maybe that would be something they could get in the license agreement or something to say that Pikus can consume those config changes. And you know, they can get a report back on the config changes or something like that automatically or something from the company. So versus having to go in and ask them for, you know, having to interview them or something to get that output. I don't know. You know what I mean? Because you want to automate that as much as possible and reduce the human interaction for it. So if they could not only understand that this company is running CrowdStrike and this company is running CrowdStrike, but this company A has got greater success rate than company B, and automatically they can consume the configs from both and do a compare and contrast to find out what is better.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think a lot of companies might be, you know, reluctant at best to do that though.
Yeah. So they explain this by looking at variability based on several factors, including environmental configuration differences based on network architecture, compliance needs, user behavior, deployment nuances, where are you putting it, how is it interacting with other security tools and integrating, specific configuration settings, and of course the fact that the threat landscape is always changing. So they recommended continuous validation, which I am all for, and in fact they deliver as a tool. That sounds almost
surprise.
Like I'm saying that. Yeah, but yeah, surprise. And ongoing fine-tuning, but of course the big question there is with what budget? Because as we all know, many companies do not budget for care and feeding of their tools. They just buy them and put them in place.
Right. That's all the tool costs is the amount of money to buy the license. You didn't know that, Matt?
So their next item they talked about is defensive gaps that they found with automated penetration testing, which again, automated penetration testing, I'm definitely seeing being kind of folded into this vertical. Their Pikus Attack Path Validation, a cutting-edge automated penetration testing solution, which identifies the shortest paths that attackers might exploit to gain domain admin privileges. They were able to successfully achieve domain admin in 24% of the tests. which actually is interesting. I'm going to skip a couple of items here because they also said that in 25% of the tests, they were able to crack user password hashes. So if they're saying that in 25% of the environments tested, they can crack a password hash, and in 24%, they're able to achieve domain admin status, that means they have a nearly 100% success ratio if they can crack even one password hash.
Oh, right. And that doesn't, and they didn't say crack an administrator password either.
No, they said anyone's password.
Anyone's password.
Yeah, so that is a wild claim. And actually, no, this is another thing that I would love to ask somebody specifically and be like, so tell me, this seems interesting. So in these assessments, they found that in 40%, there's at least one instance where domain administrator access and just blank. It looks like that is an incomplete copy paste. All right. This doesn't make sense, actually. So next item that we had here was penetration testing assessments performed by PCS APV revealed that in 40% of the tested environments, there was at least one instance where domain access administrator was achieved.
That's why I had that other note is what's the difference between the 24% and the 40%? That's why I had the note in there about that, because they seem to be saying the same thing, but different percentages. I didn't understand what the difference was.
I agree. Yeah, they're saying they found it in 24% of the tests and they found it in 40% of the environments. Maybe there were multiple tests in the environment? Because one of them is saying...
Oh, that's the difference. It's based on the organizations.
Gotcha. Well, that's a...
So 24% of the tests across all organizations, but only 40% of the organizations, I think.
We need to talk to them. We could write this report better. They should give us access to the data and then we can write the report.
Yeah. Write to them and say, hey, can we get access to your Google Doc that you use to...
your Google Doc. And all the data is in a Google spreadsheet. All right. I think this attack path thing is interesting. I think this is something a lot of orgs don't look at. But there are attacker tools like Bloodhound that look at it. And I recently looked at some cloud tools that included as part of their findings where they are looking specifically. It's a little bit different than the Azure AD or Active Directory related attack paths, but they will look at and call out if there is a vulnerability on a system that's exposed to the internet, and it'll like kind of walk through how it's exposed to the internet and how an attacker can get there and mm-hmm. what vulnerabilities they exploit. So I think that's a super useful concept. So typically these attack paths begin with actions like dumping a user's hash, cracking it, following by privilege escalation, then lateral movements using the newly obtained privileges. And it's interesting how they are doing this all automatically, leading to a full compromise of the network, which I don't think we've seen any attack. At least it hasn't hit like the major news of any attackers using these types of automated cracking, privilege escalation, lateral movement yet, have we?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head.
I know, right? That seems weird to me. It seems like the defense is actually ahead of the attackers for a brief moment in time. Although we have seen a bunch of, I know CrowdStrike semi-famously recently came out and said that the average ransomware time was down to like 36 minutes or something bullshit like that.
Well, I wouldn't say we're ahead in considering the scores we're talking about here, because it looks like they're getting away with doing this full thing, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think we're really ahead.
It's fair. That is fair. So... Sure. Their recommendation here is organizations should focus on critical areas of privilege escalation, credential access, and lateral movement. It's helpful that they provide all this. And I think that this is a point, too, where you can use attack paths to identify and stop privilege escalation and the points where the attacker can be most easily detected and stopped. Yep. I would bet if you looked at your environment, you'll find there's a couple accounts that just have admin credentials or domain admin credentials that just aren't as well secured as the others. And if you get those remediated, you make it a lot harder.
Right. Almost like choke points or...
Yeah. Choke points. I was trying to think of that earlier today and I could not think of that. I'm getting old. It's bullshit. All right. The next item was detection rule effectiveness. They listed out a bunch of different problems that they found that led to failed logging, failed monitoring, failed detections. Improper log source consolidation was top one at 23%. This was around event coalescing and reduction in event volume by bringing it all into one. I think they're talking about data models in Splunk and stuff like Cribble, where it's a preprocessor, although that's built into Splunk now, and you can reduce the volume before it comes in. If you screw that up, I can definitely see why that would break stuff. I didn't realize even 23% of people were using that stuff. they're suggesting there is disabling the event coalescing, which is a little bit of a wild recommendation. How about you just fix it? Log source availability combined was 15% between broken log source and unavailable log source. Either it's disabled or it was airing out. And I'm kind of shocked that these two are this low. For a while, I was a sysadmin way back in the day, working as a government contractor. Sysadmin is probably a strong word. I was working with the sysadmin, but he made me focus on the broken log sources. And it was just a constant headache. Just every single day, I was fixing broken log sources. But maybe the automation to correct it has gotten better.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. And then the next set, there's a bunch of different performance-related problems. And I think that some of them can be dropped at the feet of Sigma. So stuff like Sigma and Splunk content now coming with Splunk and default rules are in a lot of ways a huge boon. We've talked before about how content shouldn't be bespoke and how everybody should be running mostly the same detections because attackers are using the same techniques, et cetera, et cetera. But the problem is a lot of these rules, like if you just downloaded it from a Sigma repository and you slammed it in place in your environment, it's not going to work. The Splunk ones, for example, rely on all of your data models being properly filled out. And if you're not using the data models or you don't have them set up in exactly the way that Splunk does, like the rule is just not going to work. I don't know if that's true or not, but that was the first thing that came to mind for this.
That makes sense, though.
Yeah. I think finally, there's two more. Three more. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Well, this stuff is just like FYI. Not really terribly useful, but it's something that you always see in the report about the statistics by region, by industry, region, attack vector, MITRE tactic, and threat group. So we're not going to dig real deep into all these, but we're just going to highlight a couple of things that seem to jump out in these different sections. Call them honorable mentions, if you will. So in the performance by industry, in the terrible detection section, you got transportation at 10% detection, the government at 19%, and this is the next worst one when you go above government is at 45. So it's not even like they're strung across the whole gambit. It's like you've got these really terrible ones, then you've got mediocre, then you've got better. And when you get to the alerting, you know, based on the fact that we talked about this before, that they're across the board, everybody's at 12% there. So they're just about uniformly terrible in alerting, except for aviation, which was decent. And a couple of things to note here is that banking got 3 times worse this year than it was last year. So they're doing more than stagnating, I think, over there.
That blows my mind. This is the alerting, right? So this goes back to kind of what we talked to. They would have had to have made no changes to their alerting, and they would have had to... triple their tests. When the banking sector made no changes to alerting for them to have not gone backwards.
Yep.
That was wild.
And along with the alerting, you know, we talked about the transportation and government and detections and alerting. Transportation's at 2%, government's at 7%. So they're not detecting and not alerting in either of those two industries.
Blows my mind.
Nothing really interesting in region. You go down to attack vector. Everybody's terrible at data exfil identification at 9%.
It's not really.
And the next worst one is web app at 51%. So that's another, you know, big jump between the differences there.
So what's interesting about that, hold on, before we jump to the next part, web apps are one of the top vectors for attacking. So I find that super interesting that everybody's bad at that. And that's one of that and known credentials are like the two top ones for how bad guys are getting in these days.
Mm-hmm.
That's just interesting. That's very, very interesting to me.
Now, when you get into the prevention effectiveness by operating system, macOS endpoints were at 23% and Windows is at 62 and Linux at 65. So Macs are 3 times worse at prevention than other operating systems. And I can think of a couple of reasons for this. Where, you know, you've got the myth of Mac invulnerability, where people just aren't as concerned about the security of Macs because there's this mythology that, you know, the risk of being compromised on a Mac is low. And it's kind of, the thing is, it's a myth and not a myth at the same time, is that the reason that myth is even there is simply market share. The share of the Macs is just so much less than the Windows, they aren't being the focus of attacks. Another reason is there's fewer Macs. So there's a reduced focus on prevention on those Macs in any organization. So in general, there's a lot fewer Macs than Windows systems in the organization. The last one is lack of corporate support. In a certain organization I was at, they had dozens of Macs, but no Mac technicians at all. When I got there, I became the Mac technician, even though I wasn't even in. And IT refused to support the Macs, said, Mac is not a support system or operating system here. We understand that parts of the business need it to do their work, but we don't support it.
But screw you guys.
It was just, you know, unbelievable.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think it's that last one. I've definitely seen that in companies I've worked with in the past. Little to no support for Macs.
But I will say, years later, they did turn around and start supporting. But it was years later. You know, finally, I was able to get out of that.
Only after you left.
Actually, it was right before. But the MITRE tactics, nothing really to say there. Threat group, also nothing really to say there.
Sad day. Sad day. All right, last bit here before we get to the key recommendations, assuming anybody's still listening, is spotlight on ransomware attacks and vulnerabilities. They had a list of major ransomware groups, and they would tell you how many of the organizations would successfully prevent the ransomware based on the TTPs of that organization. Black Byte was the best or worst, depending on how you're looking at it. Best, I guess, if you're an attacker. A threat attacker. Only 17% of organizations were successful in preventing it. Now, what I wonder is that 17%, does that mean that every single TTP was blocked, or like they blocked a single key TTP around lateral movement? Like, how are you defining blocked here? Because...
Yeah, you'd have to ask them, because look at it that from the outside, I would say, okay, 17% did not end up getting encrypted, you know, because that's the bottom line successful failure when you're talking about ransomware.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's true, because attackers have the ability to do different things. If they, you know, tried something and it failed, they could just turn around and try again. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of shocked that some of this ransomware is so little caught, but I guess I shouldn't be. These are the folks that are, you know, currently most active, trying to change their, constantly trying to keep their tactics updated. Doesn't make sense to me. All right.
And the vulnerability section, there's nothing really to report in here. It's kind of interesting to say that with the 10 least caught vulnerabilities being exploited listed there. Other than that, nothing really to note in the vulnerability section.
How boring.
But now we get the exciting part, which is the key recommendations.
Really? You thought this was the exciting part?
I was quite thrilled by it. I don't know.
I am glad that you are happy about it.
Liar.
Call me. So their number one recommendation is adopt a proactive security mindset.
Done.
Yeah. One of the earlier points they talk about, corporations should adopt an assume breach mindset. Honey, you're like 10 years too late.
Right. I've been talking about that forever now.
Yeah. Item number two, implement continuous threat exposure management. Continually identify, prioritize, validate, and fix your exposures.
Yep. Good advice.
Enhance your detection and prevention mechanisms. I prefer to enhance my calm, but... So they talk about it, optimizing the entire detection engineering pipeline, including log collection, performance alert mechanisms, regularly review and update detection rules. All great things. Again, I'll wait till we double or triple our budget.
And of course, strengthen your ransomware defenses.
You know what? I'm not worried about ransomware. I'm just going to ignore that.
Yeah. So, and typical ransomware stuff, effective backups, endpoint detection controls, you know, and obviously, regular simulations.
Which is, of course, what they sell.
Yeah. So
definitely do that. Improve endpoint security configuration. Security controls and endpoints, make them properly configured, put your EDR tools in place, conduct regular audits and endpoint security assessments. I'm sensing a pattern here.
I'm missing it. You're going to have to spell that out for me. So, and then enhanced log management and analysis. So fix all the stuff that they listed above in the SIM section that was a problem.
And prioritize password security. Implement strong password policies. Confirm that your password hashing methods are robust. And regularly audit and enforce your compliance with password security policies. Well, all good stuff. None of these are really...
It's not mind-blowing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, that's pretty rare to see that anything. It's not like all this stuff hasn't really been said a dozen times before. at this stage.
This is honestly getting kind of vexing to me at this point. Like, we know how to secure stuff. Like, none of this is a surprise. None of this is like, I can't believe it. I had no idea how to do this. We know it all.
Right. Yeah, it's just like...
suck at doing it.
Well, that's where these recommendations and stuff need to move to, is away from saying, do this, this, and this, to this is how you get this done with these resources and this budget. That's really, and that, because it's so hard, that's why you're not seeing anything. You're not seeing a lot of that anyway, and providing some feedback on how to get the things done that you already know you need to get done. But if you don't have a breach and attack simulation tool, I think you should most definitely get one.
I agree.
And if you have a breach and attack simulation tool, read the reports and take advantage and do the recommended actions.
Use
the report says.
I don't know.
Because if you're running these things and you're not doing something with them, it's kind of wasting your money, which you could give to me.
You know, actually, on that subject, one thing that I would love to see that they didn't report on here, separate out the results from folks that have had their tool for a year versus the new ones. I think it'd be interesting to see these people have had the tool for a year and they have made these improvements.
Right. So you're probably going to see a definitive change for the first year, and then from year two to three, like, they do less and less until you get to year four or five, but they do nothing.
Yeah.
Like, where shiny and new, they start doing a bunch of work on it, and then as the older it gets, the more it becomes OBE, and they start doing less and less with it. I think that's a good, that would be a good, some good numbers to see in there.
Definitely be interesting. All right. Yeah, you had one more item here.
Yeah, so if you can only focus on one thing, I think you should be focusing on alert development for the logs you have versus continually onboarding logs without the use cases to develop alerts for them, and take advantage of the logs you have. Otherwise, you're wasting your time. You know, bring, like I said before, bringing on logs and not developing use cases and alerts for them is not making your organization safer. It'll help you with forensics, but it's not going to increase your protection.
Yeah, and I think the biggest opportunity here is focusing on the alerts generated by your tools. As they said here, the tools prevented 76% of the attacks. And almost certainly those tools generated some type of log saying, hey, we blocked this thing. If your tools are blocking 76% of the attacks, it is very unlikely that an attacker is making their way completely throughout your environment with never being detected.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this goes back to what David said earlier. You don't want to just turn on, it'll be like, oh, the guy in the podcast told me to just turn on alerting for everything that's blocked. That's a little wild. You want to selectively turn on alerting for blocked things. We talked a bit earlier about command and control being blocked. Maybe you want to look at failed local admin creation or failed domain admin creation or failed policy creation in AD where someone's trying to escalate there. Like, look for those critical few, which I hate saying because it's such a business term. I'm going to have to bleep out or remove a lot of swear words in this one. But look for those blocked ones that indicate something truly wrong and not just random scanning activity.
Right.
Alert on those.
Yeah, what you want to alert on is if you're going to alert on something that was blocked, you want to alert on something that was blocked, which is indicative that something else failed before that happened.
Yeah.
All right, which leads us into our next article, which hopefully this should be fairly short, which is not so much an article as a white paper or a guidance document from DHS, my favorite organization.
Oh, yeah. Sure. This goes back to what we were just talking about the what things to log. The DHS is here to tell us what to log.
Yep. So this is the guidance for implementing M-21-31, improving the federal government's investigative and remediation capabilities.
We're the government. We're here to help.
Every day. So this is a DHS CISA document that says, and this is a quote from it, 31 describes logs that agencies must capture as well as any required retention times. It also establishes a maturity model to track agency implementation. This document provides operational guidance to assist agencies with implementation of the M2131 requirements. So this is dated, it's very intuitive. So this is dated December 22, 2022, but the URL seems to indicate that it was published in February of 2023. So we're bringing this up, you know, because we just got done talking about all this logging stuff in a previous report, but also a cybersecurity dive just published an article entitled CISA, Officials Credit Microsoft Security Logging Expansion for Improved Threat Visibility. So just if you recall, just over a year ago, there was a nation-state linked intrusion into Microsoft Exchange Online where 60,000 U.S. State Department emails were stolen. And that took place in the spring of 23 after this guidance document published. And after that whole hubbubaloo, if you will, Microsoft decided that they were going to provide some additional security logging from M365 for free, whereas they had been previously charging for that logging. And this lack of logging was blamed for the government's inability to detect the attack. Of course, it's never the government's incompetence. I would expect I expect them someday to blame the one-armed man, but they would only do that if you were Russian or Chinese, or if it would get them some additional funding for one-armed man detections.
What was the detection that we just read in the Pickus Blue Report for government? Was it like 12% or 17% or something?
Yeah, the detection was at 17. I think the alerting was at 7 or something like that.
Shocking.
Yeah. So
these are the people that are telling us how to do security.
Yep. Anyway, so I came across this and thought it was relevant, as well as the fact that I hate the government. So here we go. So this is a quote, another quote from the document. CISA recommends agencies prioritize the following event types listed in order of priority for collection and storage as they work to achieve full EL1 compliance. So starting from the top here, which is the highest priority, identity, credential, and access management. So starting at the top, we have identity, credential, and access management, followed by operating systems, followed by network device infrastructure, cloud environments, Amazon Web Services, M365, and finally, Google Cloud Platform.
Sounds perfect. Let's roll.
Yeah. So M365 are the last logs you should worry about unless you're one of the 10 places that are using Google. And this is what CISA was telling government agencies before this whole breach in the spring.
Wild. Yeah, I'm curious, actually. What do you think the priority is? I know my top priority is probably Microsoft 365 and Azure AD.
To be honest, I would not provide a recommended prioritization. Because every organization needs to look at where they're doing their business at, where their critical functions are at, and all that. That's up to the individual organization. So I personally would never provide a recommendation on prioritization.
Yeah, that would be funny if they're like, all right, first thing we got to do is Microsoft 365, but we use Google. Nope, government says Microsoft 365.
So go out and buy it and then start logging it and then get back to me. So even if had they been these logs the whole time, due to this prioritization, they probably would not have been collecting or monitoring them anyway. So I'm guessing in that case, then that would have been a one-armed man blaming situation. So a bunch of government agencies came out with another report just last week, which is the best practices for event logging and threat detection. You know, nothing earth-shattering in there, but couldn't hurt to take a look, read through it. The link will be in the show notes. It's just ridiculous that the government, for all their failures, is never the one to blame for their failure. It's always someone else's fault.
Yeah. All right. Well, that looks like that's all the events we have for today. We don't know where's
our outro is missing.
Well, I'll ad lib it. That looks like all the events we have for today. Follow us at @SerengetiSec on Twitter and
subscribe on your favorite podcast.
There we go. Subscribe on your favorite podcast.